The Vietnam War officially ended in 1975, but here in the United States, where there is a significant Vietnamese refugee immigrant population, the war continued for a few more years. Its first known casualty was 27-year-old Lam Dung, the founder of the first Vietnamese youth center in the U.S. Because he was seen as a communist sympathizer, he earned the ire of segments of the Vietnamese population in San Francisco, where he lived. On July 21, 1989, he was gunned down in front of his apartment building. A few days later, an anti-communist organization, calling themselves the Anti-Communist Viets Organization, took credit for Lam's murder. To this day, no one has been charged or convicted of the crime. And since his murder, several other Vietnamese-American journalists were murdered. A climate of fear pervaded throughout the Vietnamese community that still persists to an extent today. In 2009, San Jose's first Vietnamese-American council member faced a recall effort by anti-communists because she did not support naming a business district Little Saigon. Now, a new documentary exploring the struggle within the Vietnamese immigrant community will screen at this year's Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival. The film is called Enforcing the Silence, and its director, Tony Nguyen, now joins me in studio. Welcome to Uprising, Tony.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
The world premiere of your film, I should say, is happening on Saturday as part of the film festival at the Lumley Sunset. People can find out more about the film festival at asianfilmfestla.org. Well, I should say I was quite fascinated by watching the film. And, you know, of course, there's always tension in immigrant communities between old guard and new, between old generation and younger generation, between conservative and progressive. But this particular rift in the Vietnamese-American community was surprising in the intensity of it and the fact that it has led to murder. Before we get into the larger context, tell us about this young man, Lam Dung. What exactly his background was, how he came to the United States?
Okay. So Lam was quite different from a lot of the Vietnamese refugees who whose history kind of started in 1975 with the fall of Saigon in April. April 30th, actually, which is the 36th anniversary tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And his history is a little bit different because he actually came to the United States in 1971 as a high school exchange student and graduated from high school in Oberlin, Ohio, and actually went on to college in Oberlin, in Ohio, which is kind of known as kind of like the Berkeley of the Midwest. And so he grew up, he didn't grow up, but he went to school, he was educated here in the States during the war, before the war was over. And I think that his experience here in America played a role in just his outlook in terms of how he felt around what was happening in his homeland. Mm-hmm.
So then he moved to San Francisco and he started this community center, the first of its kind. But the people who he was serving, the community members who he was serving, had a different political outlook than he did.
That's right. So when he graduated from Oberlin in 76, he moved to San Francisco and got involved with the Vietnamese refugee community that was settling in the Bay Area, and specifically in the Tenderloin neighborhood in San Francisco, a pretty depressed area of the city. And he started a youth center, the Vietnamese Youth Development Center, which is actually still around in the Tenderloin, a few blocks from its original location at Glide Memorial Church. And he did serve the Vietnamese community and also other Southeast Asian youth that were settling there.
And then he was tragically murdered on July 21st, 1981. I mentioned that an organization, a sort of a shadowy anti-communist organization, took credit for his murder. Tell us about this organization.
Okay. Well, there's not much known about the initial group that sent a communique to the Associated Press in New York City. What is also known is after the first communique, a second communique was sent to a Vietnamese language press in California. And this this communique and the group that signed it became known to the FBI as VOCERN, which is an acronym for the Vietnamese Youth, which is an acronym for Vietnamese Organization to Exterminate Communists and Restore the Nation.
To exterminate. So literally in its title, it uses the term exterminate.
That's right. Mm. And so this group would actually, this Vosern would go on to claim responsibility for a number of unsolved murders, specifically of Vietnamese American journalists and activists. Mm.
I want to play for our listeners a clip of your documentary, Enforcing the Silence. In this clip, we hear from some of the people that you interviewed, as well as a clip of the only surviving video piece or video clip of Lam Dzong himself.
So when you have someone like him who has this kind of more liberal take on things, because he really was at that point really more of a typical American teenager, young person, it was not well received. And the perception was in the community that he was a communist.
My impression at that time was even though the war was over in 1975, it wasn't quite over yet here among the Vietnamese. There's still a conflict. Well, most of the Vietnamese people are too busy surviving to be bothered by the ideological differences, and they benefited from his services, actually. But there are some who didn't like his political ideology. They thought he was too liberal, too Americanized, or too young.
I think the American government is deliberately trying to destroy the culture of Vietnam itself. I think there's a term for it, which is ethnocide or something, making people less proud of themselves, believing in the values of the American system, believing in something that is very foreign to them.
And that's the voice of Lam Dzong, and that's a clip of the documentary Enforcing the Silence. My guest is the filmmaker, the director of the film, Tony Nguyen. So this excerpt, we heard some of the background of how he was perceived as a communist sympathizer. We also heard his own voice. Tell us about the paper, the newspaper that he published, and how that sort of raised the ire of members of his community.
Okay. Well, I mean, briefly, before he started his newspaper, he also had a radio program that was protested as well for, you know, being for supposedly spreading communist propaganda, which was never really, you know, proven. But his newspaper, he started in 1980, and what he did with his newspaper, Gai Ding Lang, also known as the Village Temple, was he reprinted stories from Vietnam, from the state-run press in Vietnam, Hanoi stories. And that was very controversial for him to do, given that a lot of the refugees that came here fled communism and didn't really want to know or hear that perspective from the regime there. I mean, the newspaper also talked about housing rights, refugee rights, and where to go to get assistance for the new community. And so it wasn't just this, but this this piece around reprinting stories really irked a lot of the community.
How did you track down in making this documentary? How did you track down all of the people that are involved in his case? You talked to the FBI officer who was in charge of his case, whose voice we also heard, and she had a lot to say. It sounded like she had done a lot of her homework.
Yes, it wasn't easy to track down all the different primary and secondary sources involved in this story. Actually, it took a long time. I mean, I think through, you know, getting one connection, then through that you know, firsthand tie, then I was able to talk to some other people. But it was a process where they were like, who the heck is this young second generation Vietnamese American who's looking into not only Lum's story, but all of these other murders as well.
Now, the relationship between this shadowy anti-communist organization that took credit for many of the deaths, including Lum's, and the United States is one that you briefly explore, and the U.S. government, I should say, is one that you briefly explore in your documentary, Exploring the Silence. In particular, Richard Armitage. Tell us about this connection and what potential links there are, because, of course, the U.S. has historically been known to do business with, and you know, certain agencies will happily work with unsavory characters if it benefits the government agenda.
Well, you know, it's I couldn't, you know, necessarily prove that there is a direct link to mm-hmm. Armitage, but those that I interviewed and in my research, it appears that he may have had links to an above ground organization that the Bureau and other federal investigators linked to you know, Armitage and mm-hmm. this organization. But Armitage is kind of a colorful political figure. He served in Vietnam. He was part of the first Reagan administration and also the first Bush II administration. And he's also known for probably the thing that he's most known for more recent in times is the leak of Valerie Plame's identity, the CIA agent. But yeah, it is something that I wanted to try to at least mention, because if there is a link to Armitage and to the United States government in terms of holding accountable who might have been behind some of these murders, or you know, who didn't voice you know, stand up again, for justice around these murders, then you know, I felt like perhaps the government could have been complicit mm-hmm. in not taking a stand quicker in terms of investigating these cases.
Well, it's certainly a bizarre story that you explore in the documentary, but you also look at the larger context of the sentiments in the Vietnamese community and the polarizing in the community. I want to ask you now, finally, all these years later, after the war has ended, with younger generations of Vietnamese Americans growing up like yourself, Has the anger and the vehement anti-communist sentiment been tempered a little bit? Has it died down a little bit?
I like to believe that the community is shifting and progressing. I think the fact that I felt courageous enough to put this story out now, 36 years after the war and on the 30th anniversary of when Lum was murdered.
And have you faced any backlash?
Have I faced any backlash? Not yet, to be honest with you.
Because the world premiere is this Saturday.
Yeah, this Saturday. I mean, I was I haven't faced any in major backlash. I do know that there has been some critique, and my film is sparking a conversation, mm-hmm. which is one of the major goals of this documentary. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me just give our listeners the information again. The world premiere of Enforcing the Silence is this Saturday, April 30th at 5 p.m. at the Lemley Sunset. It's part of the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival. Lots of other films as well as part of the festival. You can find out more about the entire festival, which started yesterday, goes through May 7th, at the website asianfilmfestla.org. We'll also link to the entire schedule from our website, uprisingradio.org, later today. And the film has its own website, enforcingthesilence.com. That's enforcingthesilence.com. Well, Tony Nguyen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and best of luck to you with the film.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Tony Nguyen is the director of the documentary Enforcing the Silence. Again, it's part of the Asian Pacific Film Festival of Los Angeles, happening this week, starting yesterday, going through May 7th, asianfilmfestla.org. Lots of events happening this weekend. Hope you can make it out to at least one, if not more, of them. And hope to see you tonight at the Chris Hedges event. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, I wanted to quote Mark Twain, who once said, "Truth is the most valuable thing we have, so I try to conserve it."